Well, I'm glad to have you guys here tonight. We're going to be in Matthew chapter 25. I'm going to go ahead and read the scripture again for you, and then we'll get into it. This is one of those odd little parables that when I actually spoke at Trinity Episcopal this morning, and when I was asked earlier in the week to speak, and then I said, oh, are you guys going to be out of town? And they said no, and I said, okay. And then I read the scripture and I realized, you guys don't want to preach on this scripture. I know how this works. And then it was admitted to me later on. We just wanted to see what you would do with that verse. I said, okay, well, that's fine. And I'm actually really kind of in love with the ideas that came out of it, although I've never preached on this parable before. It's in Matthew 25, verses 1 through 12, and it says this. At that time, the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 young bridesmaids who took their lamps and went out to meet the groom. Now, five of them were wise and the other five were foolish. The foolish ones took their lamps, but they didn't bring oil from them. But the wise ones took their lamps and they also brought containers of oil. When the groom was late in coming, they all became drowsy and went to sleep. At midnight, there was a cry. Look, the groom, come out to meet him. Then all those bridesmaids got out and prepared their lamps. But the foolish bridesmaids said to the wise ones, give us some of your oil because our lamps have gone out. But the wise bridesmaids replied, no, because if we share for you, there won't be enough for our lamps and yours. We have a better idea. You go to those who sell oil and buy some for yourselves. But while they were gone to buy oil, the groom came. Those who were ready went with him into the wedding, and the door was shut. Later, the other bridesmaids came and said, Lord, Lord, open the door for us. But he replied, I tell you the truth, I do not know you. Therefore, keep alert, because you do not know the day or the hour. That's a scary verse. All right. I admitted to everyone this morning that this gets at a real deep-seated fear for me. I don't feel it consciously, but I've got this very subconscious deep fear about being prepared or not being prepared. And I just mean on the cosmic, you know, at the pearly gates kind of sense, but just in general in life. I had a situation that happened to me that I never thought would happen in my life, which is, I'll tell you. So I went to a funeral for a friend's grandfather. And I didn't know the grandfather, didn't know anyone in the family but this person. And the funeral was at True Light Baptist. This was several years ago downtown. True Light's a place I've gotten to preach a couple times. And so I know the folks there and they know me. I've been in their services and I understand because it's a different tradition than I grew up in. It's a Black Baptist church and the singing's amazing and the preaching goes a little longer even for me. And I know some of you are like, what? How can that be true? So I've been in the services and I kind of know how the service operates. I'd never been in a funeral there. And I was showing up a little bit late and I was just going to kind of show up for the friend and let him see me and kind of let him know, hey, I'm with you. And then, you know, I had about 25 minutes, 30 minutes, and then I had an appointment I had to be at. So then I was going to scoot out the back door, sit in the back, scoot out the back door, the whole thing. I had it planned out perfect. It was going to work great. So luckily that day, one of the meetings I had to dress up a little bit. I wasn't dressed real nice, but I wasn't like this. Show up, make sure I got there right on time. The family was walking in, so I got to see the person. Hey, I'm here for you. Glad to see you. You know, don't know anyone else there. I think I was the only white person in the room for this particular funeral, so I did kind of stand out a little bit. But I kind of went and sat right in the back, you know, looked at my watch, said, okay, this is going to work out perfectly. It's starting right on time. I'm going to get out of here in time to make the meeting. So as I'm sitting there, we're about 10 minutes in. Choir sang the first amazing number. Everyone comes in that's on the stage, and they've got a lot of these big chairs on the stage, and all the chairs are filled. Person, nice suit after nice suit after nice suit. Come later to find out these are all the preachers that are associated with the family from different churches. And as Archie, who's the pastor over there at True Light, who I'm friends with, gets up and he kind of does the welcome and talks through the order of things. And I'm looking at my watch. I'm going to go 4 minutes here, and then I'm getting ready to get out. And he says, Pastor Dixon. I mean, just like in the funeral, from the microphone, Pastor Dixon, it's good to see you here. And I just, you know, hey. And then he says, come up here and sit with all the other pastors. Aww. And I do the, no, that's fine. I'm just here, you know. He goes, no, I mean, and he kind of is a little bit insistent to where it would be weird if I didn't do it. And so I do the, okay, pull out my phone, do the, not going to make the meeting, send, airplane mode, put the phone in my pocket. And then I'm like, oh, man, all right. So now I got to go up and I'm sitting on stage. Don't know anyone there. Again, don't even know the name of the person who's passed away, right? I'm not there because I knew that person. I'm there to support someone I know. So I'm sitting on, there's like seven people on stage, and I'm like the second to last chair. There's a chair that's open, thankfully. And so I sit down and I'm doing the thing, and I cannot stand being on stage during a church service. It's the worst. I don't know if you've ever done it. I don't know if you ever had to, like, in what tradition you grew up in, if you have to sit on stage, it's the worst. Because everyone's looking at you, and it's bad. But I'm up there, and I'm like, all right, well, I'm here for the whole service. That's fine. This will be a good sign of support. So song, person speaks, song, another person speaks. There's kind of just a lot of things going on. It's kind of a vague order, so I'm kind of keeping up, but I'm also just staying engaged and listening in some great sermons. And each preacher that gets up is like killing it. I mean, they bring the house down every time. They're doing a great job. And then the guy who's sitting next to me is up there. He's talking. And he kind of ramps it up, and then he's kind of bringing it down now. He's kind of landing the plane, and you know it's getting ready to go. And Archie goes like this to me. Archie hits me in the leg and says, all right, you're next. And I said, I'm sorry. He goes, you're next. And I was like, oh, no. I and I didn't even get the second no out of my mouth when that preacher sat down and Archie got up and introduced me to preach. Like, God's honest truth. I grabbed one of the programs because I didn't know the name of the person. And I stood up and I looked down and I said, I did not have the pleasure of knowing Mr. John Johnson. And I had to give a sermon. Oh, I forgot to say this. I didn't realize because I was in the very back. I didn't realize how I was standing in the podium, open casket, right here, right? Which just adds another element to it. And I had to preach a sermon for someone over someone's open casket for someone I'd never met in my entire life, on the spot. I mean, literally had maybe 30 seconds tops to get ready for it, right? And when he said you're next, it just. It's your worst nightmare, right? And I have, and this, again, I'm going to tell you something, and if you're good at interpreting dreams, this probably says something about me I don't want to know, so don't tell me. But I have a recurring nightmare about this. I don't mean the funeral. We jumped off that bridge, we're good. But I have this recurring nightmare where kind of, I don't know if your dreams work like movies. I don't know if it's kind of seen so many movies they kind of look that way, but where kind of lights come up and I'm side stage on a play and I'm watching the actors on the stage, the lights are on them, and they're acting out a scene, and I can feel someone behind me kind of like straightening things out and brushing off my shoulders and doing, I never see this person. And then just after about 30 seconds or so of watching this and me kind of just doing like, okay, where am I? What, trying to get my bearings, I get a hand in my back that kind of pushes me out on the stage. And it's the exact same kind of thing every time, and I walk, and so then I kind of come out on the stage, and the lights are really bright, and I can't see anything, but there's enough of a murmur for me to know there's a lot of people there, and then I realize, like, I'm in a play, I don't know my character, I don't know any lines, I don't know if I'm supposed to have an accent, I don't know if it's a comedy or a tragedy, if I'm a good guy or a bad guy, I don't know anything, right? And so I just have that moment of panic, and everything slows down in my head, and I begin to just, oh no, I don't know what's happening. And I always look at the other actors. They're not famous actors or anything. I don't know who these made up people are. They're not even like friends. But I look at them, and they just kind of look at me, and they give me nothing, and they're waiting for me to deliver whatever line I'm supposed to deliver. And then I do the, okay. And in my own like inner monologue, in my dream, I say, okay, Mike, you can do this. You did improv, theater for a while. You can do it. You can pull this off. And so I just take a deep breath and I start making stuff up. And I usually try to be funny because I feel like that's going to disarm it. And the jokes never go well. I try to do something funny. Everyone just looks at me like I'm weird. The actors look confused. They try to play along, but it's not working. And it's just all of time starts to slow down. And it's that just worst possible scenario. And then I usually kind of wake up in a cold sweat, with a hole in my stomach from the whole thing. And it's that anxiety, right? And I don't really, I kind of honestly consider myself pretty good at winging it in general. I mean, I never prepare for sermons on Sunday night. I'm kidding, Heidi. Man, no one laughs at that. That makes me feel bad. You guys think that might be true. Same thing happened this morning. But I don't really spend a lot of time like worried about that consciously. But somewhere deep down, it's obviously a fear because I really do. That's my one recurring nightmare I have now. Used to be the flying monkeys from Wizard of Oz when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Those things showed up everywhere in my dreams for years and haunted me. Mm-hmm. It's this whole side stage play that I don't know the lines for, unprepared, and just that feeling of terror from it. I have this deeply seated, and I'll be honest, if you can analyze your own self, I blame verses like this. And I blame the church I grew up in. And I know some of us have kind of similar backgrounds, but I grew up in a conservative evangelical church. They dealt heavily in the commodity of fear. And even though my personal family situation was very was ideal, I mean, it was very Beaver Cleaver-ish, at church I was scared a lot. And that was on purpose. Like, that was, I think it came from a good place, but it was something that, it was a tool that was used to try and get us right. And they showed us as kids movies like A Thief in the Night. Did you guys ever see A Thief in the Night? It's the most horrifying, you should never show this to kids, right? It's basically a religious horror movie. It's horrible. And it's got the worst soundtrack on the planet with the song that was, I Wish We'd All Been Ready. And it was this really bad band. I can't remember, they have the name of the band that's on the screen. It's just the worst 70s, 80s, schlocky, it's horrible. But the whole message is this idea that there's these kind of well-intentioned people who think they're okay with God, but they're not, and they don't realize it. And then they're caught off guard, and then, you know, you aren't prepared, and if you're the one that's not prepared, really bad things happen, right? And I mean, it was the stuff of nightmares if you were a sincere religious kid like I was. I was a good kid, right? I wanted to do what was right. I believed in God. I wanted to be okay. And I always had this sneaking fear. It's why I got saved like 78 times. I always had this sneaking fear that maybe I wasn't actually ready. Maybe it wasn't okay. Maybe I was going to be caught without oil in the lamp and be left out, and God would say, sorry, I never knew you. Right? And preachers like to use this text for that, to instill this idea of being outside in the dark, begging for mercy that won't come. If this was being preached in my church when I was growing up, the sermon probably would have started with, are you ready? I mean, are you ready now? Anything happened last night? Anything happened on that Saturday night that you need to go ahead and get reconciled? Because you never know, it could happen right now. Or now, or now, or now. You know, just some of you are getting a little annoyed. I keep saying now. Maybe you should ask for forgiveness for all that anger in your heart right now, because it's coming now. You know, it's like this. All this, and my parents used to wonder why I all of a sudden developed a deep love for ministering to children and volunteered in the nursery as much as I possibly could to avoid the church service, right? I would literally rather be thrown up on than sit in those services. But it's still somewhere deep inside of me. And so there I stand in my dreams once every month or 2 months, side stage, sweaty, scared. I wish I'd been ready, right? Unprepared, left out. Now, like all distorted theologies, this obsession with being on high alert at all times is based in some truth. It's not completely fabricated whole cloth. There's an element of truth, a kernel of truth that then is kind of built on and distorted. Because the truth is, if we are honest, that life is fleeting. That we don't have as much control as we think we do. We don't get to determine the timelines. We don't have that much control. Life here is a vapor that floats away quickly, and we are unwise to pretend that that's not true. Our lives are not inexhaustible resources, and we should live now with that in mind, with then in mind, right? These are deeply true and deeply important things for us as people of faith. But even if we as people of faith accept the premise that life is fleeting, that things are, we are not as much in control as we think we are, that life is precious, that we are kind of waiting on this wedding feast to happen, that the bridegroom is coming back and setting things right. Even if we accept that premise, there is a problem with this kind of trip we have laid on each other of being incessantly and constantly on high alert. And the problem is, like the women in this story, we face this very particular dilemma. And that is that the darkness is deep, the night is long, and we lack the stamina. It gets real dark and we get real tired. Like these women, we as people of faith are living largely in the dark, right? This in-between time of an anticipated future, a wedding that's going to happen, a bridegroom that is coming, this anticipated future that is simultaneously somewhat of a truth now. We're engaged, we know it's coming on some level, but it hasn't fully arrived yet. The kingdom that is here and the kingdom that is coming at the same time, right? This is a tension that we as people of faith live in. And this in-between time can be long, and it can be tiring, and at times it can be suffocatingly dark. Now, I'm not sure how you've been doing lately, but I've become really keenly aware of this in-between darkness lately. In fact, a lot of times recently, God's name has come to my lips involuntarily, and I don't just mean in the way where you hit your thumb with a hammer, and you take the Lord's name in vain, and that's what comes out. I mean in the spirit kind of groans out kind of way, where it's just the kind of the call that comes automatically to mind, right? I mean, Nazis are literally marching in the street, and they drive a truck into an innocent group of people, and the first thing you say is, oh, Jesus. Not to take the Lord's name in vain, but because you don't know really what else to call on. It just kind of comes naturally. There's more talk today of nuclear war. Oh, Lord, help us. Hundreds are dying in Puerto Rico when they don't need to be. Oh, Lord, where are you, right? 500 shot at a concert. Children killed in their church. Every man, apparently, that I ever liked as an actor is a sexual predator. Jesus, what is going on? Do something. And like you, this in-between time feels very long and can get very exhausting. And sometimes I need a nap. I can't handle 24/7 high alert in the in-between time. I'm just not capable of it. The dark is sometimes just too dark. The night is sometimes just too long. And despite how this verse is kind of used as a weapon so often, I think one of the real graces that I want to point you to in these verses, before you let it get to that thing where it feels like a hammer you're getting hit with, one of the real graces here is this. If you stop and listen to the parable, and if you stop listening to the fearmongers, in the end, what we realize in this parable is that all the women fall asleep, even the ones that go to the party. Endless vigilance is not possible. It's not expected. It's not necessary. So let's disarm this verse in that way. Maybe this is not meant to be a threat to those of us waiting for the wedding party to begin. Perhaps it's just truth-telling about this in-between time, this weird darkness that we are in right now. Maybe it's a reminder, above all things, and this is kind of the key that I want to get to tonight, maybe it's a reminder that we have to fill up on that which brings light and warmth into this world. We have to fill up on that which brings light and warmth, or we just won't make it. If the night is as long as it seems, if it's as suffocatingly dark as it appears to be, we simply must fill up on those things that enable us to survive and navigate the darkness. And the question then becomes, what gives us true light? Not temporary fleeting, not the things that we enjoy for a moment but don't really bring light into our lives. What gives us actual light and real warmth needed that we need to navigate the dark until the party starts? What is it apart from just trying to sleep through it completely and pretend like it's not there? What is it that gets us to remember the goodness that is coming above and beyond the dark that we may be experiencing? I'm not sure what that is for you. There's a lot of things. Most of my life, if you boil it down, centers around this idea. For me, in part, it's sitting in rooms like this every Sunday night. And I go someplace on Sunday morning too, which is weird. I think most preachers would do whatever they can to get away from church. I'm like, ooh, I got an open time. I'm going to church more. But it's sitting in a room with friends like you, reminding myself, sometimes through gritted teeth, depending on what the situation is, of the hope of what is here in part but will be coming fully. Reminding myself that there are others who are trying to hold the light in the darkness as well. It's giving my time and my energy and my love and my money to the community of Christ that tries to shine a light in the world. It's knowing I have brothers and sisters traveling with me through the dark. Because the truth is, I need to hear from you. I need to see you. I need to share burdens with you. And that is why I will always need and love church, whether or not it's my job. It's why I show up. It's why I give to it. It's why I'm here. Because if there is a wedding feast to come, and I think there is, I do know that although the wedding feast is to come, it's going to get dark, and it's going to feel long, and I need all the help I can get. Why wouldn't I fill up on the light anytime I can? So it's coming into rooms like this. It's sitting on the floor with my daughter instead of doing the work that's on my to-do list. It's going into whatever little weird world she's creating now in her 3.5-year-old mind that is so bizarre and funny and strange. It's dressing up like a shiny crab for Halloween because she wants me to. It's getting little glimpses of the world that I see through her unfettered and innocent eyes. And even though I'm making those very old man creaking noises every time I get up and get down again with her, I'm realizing there's a reason why people have kids before they're 40, turns out. But every funny thing she says, every sincere moment of unfiltered humanity that she unintentionally offers, it's all fuel for the lamp for me. It's being in here, it's spending that time with her daughter. For me, it's trying to do work also, maybe that helps to lighten others' loads or shines light in their darkness. Laying your head on the pillow at night, feeling like your efforts mattered at least a little bit, brought a little light into the world. Maybe it's playing good music a little too loud or dancing at the party even though maybe you should be embarrassed. Maybe it's turning off the TV. It's almost certainly turning off the news. Or even in a weird way, it's sometimes going to a funeral I'd rather avoid and hugging the neck of a grieving friend. Or it's going to the wedding and waving the sparklers of the newlywed couple and yelling at the top of your lungs like they're the Beatles. All of this is fuel. All of this is what I stockpile for when the darkness comes and I'm just too tired to move. You know what I'm talking about. And it may be different for you, but it all comes from one source, I believe. That stuff that gives us light and warmth and life in this in-between time, this tension that we live in, whatever fills the flask with hope and love and grace that's needed for the long night ahead, whatever pulls our hearts and our attention and our affection towards the wedding that is coming and away from the suffocating darkness we sometimes experience, whatever helps keeps us and our drowsy neighbors from stumbling exhausted in the dark by themselves. The wise bridesmaids in Jesus' parables are not perfect by any means, but they seem to understand a couple of truths that we should note tonight as we close. One, they have faith that the wedding feast will happen. They act as though it's a certainty, even though it must feel like 1,000 miles away. They have faith that the wedding feast will happen. They understand that it's going to get very dark before the party starts. And they seem to know that they're going to get exhausted. So they do what they can, when they can, to navigate the darkness. And that's really the only thing that makes sense. They fill up on that which helps them navigate the night that will come and the exhaustion that that night brings. So in closing, I say we make a deal as a community. Let's meet back here next week. We could bring our time, our energy, our money, all the grace and love that we can muster. We fill up the lamps again. Then we dust off our dancing shoes and get ready for the party that is to come. Let's pray.